And I want to talk to you about the wonder of grace, and it's part of the sermon series that we have planned for the season of Lent. Lent is that special time in the year when we just have an opportunity as Christians to really reflect on some of the deeper questions and deeper aspects of our faith. And we're talking about how to make faith relevant for today, which is why it's called Focus on Today. How do we make faith relevant for now? And yet be mindful of tomorrow, what's coming down the road, and how these parts of our faith are there in the future as well. And so, last week I talked about the significance of one. And of course, Christ was one and made an incredible difference in our world. And I talked about how you, as an individual, can have a significant impact upon another. And I suggested that you be a light for somebody else in their darkness. And if you can be that one person there that is at the right time when a person's going through a tough time, you indeed will be very significant in their life. Today I'm going to talk about the wonder of grace, and I'll tell you more about that in a minute. Next week we're going to hear about the blessings of hope and what makes hope such a key quality in the life of us as Christians. The week after, the clarity of light. The following week, the strength of the Spirit. And then the final one, the unity of the mind. And so we want to engage people in these deeper concepts of faith and to grow in a way that helps us to become more Christ-like. In this story that Darlene read, it's a great story of Abram. Abram was a man who was doing very well, well-established, and everything was going well. And then all of a sudden, God said, just get up and move. And just go this way. God didn't say where he was to go. It wasn't like, you know, God says, okay, you know, I want you to get up and I want you to go to Moose Jaw. It wasn't that specific. It was just get up and go this way. And Abram, this was before he was known as Abraham, right? There's a difference. Abram was the man before the covenant. When he had a covenant, he was called Abraham. So this was before he was well established in his connection with God, and yet he has this grace to walk away from what he knew, what was familiar, what was comfortable, and to go just simply because God asked him to leave. It's a person of great faith, which is why he's one of the key people of our individuals who guide us in our faith path. And so I want to talk about the wonder of grace. Now, we hear this word grace all the time, right? Choir just sang about grace, right? We sing, amazing grace, how sweet the sound, right? That saves a wretch like me. You look at the Bible and there's 124 passages, if you look in the New International Version, all connected with grace. Most of them in the New Testament, but all of them speaking about grace. And we hear the word grace and it's not an unfamiliar word to anyone. But the question, what is this grace? And why do you need it? And maybe that's part of the issue. Maybe you go, well, I don't think I need grace. What would I need grace for? And people are not sure whether you need grace or not. But we've heard this concept, you know, and so I want to talk a little bit about grace. Grace is this gift that comes from God that allows us to stay in this connectedness with God. And the reason that we get away from this connectedness, if you use the Old Testament, it's this sin, which we curl at when people use the word sin, and we don't see ourselves as people of sin. But sin is just a different word we would use it today. We wouldn't hear anybody use the word sin. I bet you didn't hear any of that this year, this week at all. Anybody go, man, you're a sin person. We don't use that language. But sin is selfishness. Sin is people who are selfish, people who are self-centered. That's what sin is. That's what the whole story of Adam and Eve is about. And you can don't even need the old-fashioned word, because we see very clearly that there is a lot of self-focused people. Selfishness is pretty rampant in a world We want what we want. And we care about other people a little bit, but we care most about ourselves and our families. And God calls us to care about all of humankind. God calls us to make a difference in the lives of people way beyond the capacity that some of us are doing today. And so I want to talk about this concept of grace. Well, grace is not simply a theological tenet to be grasped. Often people say, well, you know, grace, that's for theologians, you know. That's for the scholars to worry about. I don't need to worry about grace. That's way beyond my pay grade, right? Let Lyle worry about grace. Let some theologian tell us about grace. I'll just live the way I want to live, right? And grace is way more important than just kind of a theological tenet or concept. Second thing about grace that's tough is that you can't fully grasp it. If you really understand what grace is, it does not make sense at all in our minds. It's a problem. Grace is a problem because you and I have been raised in a system that says you get with what you get what you deserve. Right? You tell your kids, right? If you don't work hard, right, you're not going to get things. And we have been raised in a system that we have what we have because I deserve it. I worked hard. I worked 30 years. I did my sweat and toil. That's why I deserve to have a house. That's why I deserve to have cottages. That's why I deserve to be able to travel wherever I want in the world, because I deserve it. Nobody gave it to me. I deserve having this. And so when this concept of grace comes along and says, it's not about deserving at all. It's just a gift that God gives you. A gift that God gives you, not because you deserve it, not because you've earned it. It's just a gift that God gives because of God's love for you. And God wants to stay connected with you. And one thing that tears us away from our spirituality, what tears us away from our faith, is our selfishness and our self-centeredness. And you know you're selfish when you go, I can't afford to give. Ever caught yourself say that? I'd love to help out, but I can't afford. I can't afford that. Well, we won't get too much on that one. Third thing is, it's a spiritual experience to embrace. It's something that you can encounter. See, spirituality is not something I can fully understand. I can understand some of it, but I can experience spirituality all the time. And people do experience spirituality. And I know that because people come up and say this to me. They'll say, you're going to probably think I'm crazy, but. And when they preface that quote to me, I know they're going to tell me about something spiritual. I know they're going to tell me something that doesn't make sense to them. Doesn't make sense in life. And so spirituality is not just about your head. It's not a theological concept. It's something that I can embrace. It's something I can feel. It's something that supports me in my life. And lastly, it reveals the greatness of God's love. And so I want to sort of tease some of this out for you this morning. It's a great quote by Henry Allen Ironside. He said, grace is the opposite of merit. Grace is not only undeserved favor, but it is favor shown to the one who has deserved the very opposite. See, grace is when you receive something from God that is totally opposite to what you deserve. And that becomes a problem for us. Because there are many of us who've been in the church a long time. You know, we've worked in the church a long time. You've been on the boards, you know, you've served on committees, and there's part of you that goes, you know, I deserve a little something for what I've done. You know, I've taught Sunday school for 30 years. I've played the organ all my life in the church. There's something, you know, the church owes me something, surely. You know, I deserve something. And that peace becomes problematic and gets in the way, because when you talk that way, when you think that way, it's your ego speaking. And your ego is that part of me that helps me become selfish and self-focused. And the problem with grace for many people is it eliminates the ego. It makes everybody on the same level and the same playing field. It does not matter whether you have served God faithfully for 50 years or you have wounded God and the church and turned around all of a sudden. The same grace is offered to the person who has sweat and toiled and worked hard for 50 years in the name of Christ, and maybe has done great things, and this person over here has done terrible things to people, has not lived like Christ, and then all of a sudden wakes up and realizes that they were wrong in the way they've lived their lives, and then the grace of God comes in and puts them all on the same playing field. And people have a hard time with that. Jesus told the parable. You know the parable of the workers in the vineyard, right? The person who worked all day in the hot sun, the person who worked for the last hour, and they all got exactly the same pay. How unfair is that? That's not the system we are used to. We don't even like that system. We want to be recognized. I don't want to be like all of you folks. I want to be special. But grace puts us all on the same level. And whether you're the Pope, or whether you're drunk in the street and turn to Christ, all the grace is exactly the same that draws us into a connection with God. Another phrase that I saw here. Grace is the opposite of karma. Have you ever heard of people talking about karma? No? Grace is the opposite of karma, which is all about getting what you deserve. You see, karma, people say, you know, I'm doing this because I want good karma, right? Or, geez, this terrible thing has happened because I must have done something really bad in my fourth life ago, right? And karma's paying me now, right? And that's the idea of karma. You know, you do things nice now, and in the next life, when you're reincarnated, nice things happen until you get to a place where all nice things happen, and then you go to your reward. Karma is the system you should get what you give. You give out pain, you're going to get pain. You give out good stuff, you're going to get good stuff. You get what you deserve. Christian faith says nothing like that at all. Grace says, Grace is getting what you don't deserve. There's a story about in the middle of the 20th century, there were some theologians in a university over in Edinburgh. And they were sitting there trying to figure out, what does the Christian church have to offer all of the faiths of the world that none of the other faiths have to offer? And they were sweating over trying to figure out what, you know, was it salvation? Was it love? Was it compassion? And all of a sudden, C.S. Lewis walks in and goes, what are you guys all in a frap about? And so they told him, well, we're trying to sort through what the most significant thing of the Christian faith is that has something to offer all the faiths of the world. And instantly, C.S. Lewis says, it's grace. It's something that you get that you do not deserve. Grace helps us in two ways. It helps us to live life to the fullest in the moment, right now. Faith can help us right now. But it also is the blessing we encounter in the future. And so I want to finish off with this. The way grace helps us right now is that it gives us the ability to see things that we sometimes miss. It gives us the ability to see the wonder of the moment. Grace gives us that ability to be totally wowed by the ordinary. Right? Everybody's wowed by the extraordinary. You don't need grace to be, you know, have your socks knocked off because of something fantastic that happens. Everybody gets wowed with the extraordinary. But only the people filled with grace of God, only the people of spirit get wowed by the ordinary, by the bud that is blooming on one bush in your garden, by the sound of a bird that sings first thing. See, you came out this morning, and I'll bet you said, man, what a great day. The sun's shining. First service, I had somebody said, you know, spring is in the air. That's the first time I had that sense that spring is here. You can't help but be amazed and wonder at the beauty of days like today. What about last Tuesday and Wednesday when it was pouring rain? Right? When you walked out and it was raining on your hair, you know, and I hate it when my hair gets wet when it rains. You know, it messes it right up. You know, you think you have a hard day when you have a bad hair day? This is really bad. But nobody went, man, what a blessing. Rain on my cheeks. Rain on my cheeks. To one of the grief groups this week, I made the comment, there are people on the other side of hospice today who would love to be in a place in their life where they could walk out and feel rain on their cheeks one last time. See, grace makes me awed at the most ordinary things because these are blessings that come from God. Even worship is an incredible blessing. I don't understand why people aren't here every week, because they realize that when they come to worship here, sitting in the midst of God's presence, and are awe and struck, not by what that turkey says to you, right, but by the wonder of the Spirit of God that is in this place. Do you get it? Do you feel it? That's God's grace. Second thing that God's grace does for us for the moment is it helps us to begin again when we fall, when you make a mistake. If you look at the Bible, you might ask the question, why does God place in the Bible all those people that screw up? Have you ever asked that question? Maybe not in those kind of words, maybe. You know, you got Abraham sells his wife to Pharaoh because he doesn't want to be killed, right? Go read that story. It's a fascinating one. You got David and Bathsheba, right? David, it's not like he lacked for women. I mean, he had lots of wives, but just couldn't resist one more, right? And then to try to cover his tracks, right? He brings Uriah in. Uriah doesn't do what he's told. You have to read the story because I'm not going to tell you why he didn't do that. And so David kills him. David, key leader of the people of Israel, greatest king. Where's God put those stories in? Paul the Apostle, one of the great apostles of the early Christian church. At the beginning, he was passionate to go out and find Christians. He could hardly wait to go find Christians, but he wasn't going to go to worship with them. He was going to arrest them and have them killed. Then all of a sudden, Paul woke up. Story of Damascus, on the road to Damascus. You got to go read that one, 9th chapter of Acts. And all of a sudden he woke up, and there, the grace of God, as he says, is always sufficient. You see, when you make mistakes, the grace of God allows us to begin again. And healthy Christians are people who are not defined by their mistakes. See, we have this thing called reconciliation, this pathway of forgiveness, reconciliation, and forgiveness and grace. And that means you're no longer held accountable for what you did. Community does not do that. People outside the Christian church do not do that. I could name a couple of individuals, and the mere mention of their name, you would remember their mistake. That's the first thing you will think about when you hear some people's names, is the mistake that they make. Not all the good that they did. They may have done 20 years of good stuff, but you hear the name, they make a mistake, and all you remember is the mistake that they made. See, God knows we make mistakes, and that's why there's reconciliation. That's why there's forgiveness. That's why there's grace. Because grace doesn't say, did Lyle screw up? Did Lyle make a mistake? That's not what grace says. Grace says, of course Lyle messes up. But my grace is sufficient. And the slate is whiter than snow. Now, that does not mean that God says it's okay for what I've done wrong. It's not condoning. It just says, God will no longer hold me accountable because of God's incredible love and grace for me. And when you have that kind of grace, when you feel that kind of grace, it changes you into a different person. Another story, Queen Victoria, one of the great queens of England. There was this lady that was really mad at the queen for some reason, I don't know, didn't tell me, but she wanted to kill the queen. So she decided to infiltrate the house of the queen by becoming a servant. She worked her way up to be working close to the queen. And so when she got there close and access, you know, to all the rooms of the castle, she decided one day to bring in a knife, and she was going to stay in the parlor, the queen's parlor, and in her dressing room, and hide in the closet. And then when the queen came out, she was going to kill her. And so she waited in the closet, knife in hand. What she didn't realize is that the servants, before they put a queen into any of the room, always sweep the room, right? They always go through all the, look under the beds, look in the closets, look behind the curtains to make sure that the room is safe. And when they did that, they found this woman with the knife ready to kill the queen. Brought her before Queen Victoria, who was really annoyed and angry that this woman wanted to kill her. But the woman that wanted to kill her threw herself on the floor and begged for mercy, begged for forgiveness, and begged that she would be released. And the queen says, well, what can you assure me of if I let you go? And the lady says, I can assure you of nothing. And the queen let her go free. Now, the interesting part of the story is that this servant who wanted to kill Queen Victoria at the beginning became her most trusted servant for the remainder of her life. You see, grace changes you. When you realize how much grace God has given you, it changes you. And you want to be different in the moment, in the present, and in the future. And the final thing is that grace gives us the assurance of eternal life. When the time comes for me to no longer live in this world, it is the grace of Christ that assures me that when my heart beats for the last time and I take my last breath, there's no need for fear, that the hand of Christ will be there, and that hand will lead me through the valley of the shadows into the room that is prepared for me. And God's grace is this incredible element in our life that God gives to you and to all people of faith. And it's only given to people of faith because it's a spiritual gift. And if you don't believe, you don't believe in God, it's a gift that you cannot receive, not because God's not offering it, but because I can only take the gift if it's being offered to me in faith. And see, that's part of the reason why we want to be an engaging church. We want people to know the grace of God. We want them to encounter that grace through us. And that's why we want to draw them into the fellowship of the Christian faith, so that we know and they know that the grace of Christ has no limits and has no end. And so my hope is that you will begin to not think about it, your grace, the grace of God, but to feel, to embrace, to experience that grace. So it starts to change you more than it's changed you already, that you might be one of Christ's faithful followers to your life's end.